I was sure I left it here in the foyer. There's little to tell about the Delarese Inn. It would seem that our Telford Rawline thought very little of the establishment or its proprietors. But he was undoubtedly fascinated by the reactions of his companions. From what I can gather, Master Delarese had seen our dear past Raphael not long before, and it was in search of news from Otari for his own personal reasons. There are several curious notes about how Telford has interpreted the various emotions from the others, and it's clear he did not understand them. I can only estimate it was a somber moment without much in the way of good news, or of much news at all. Though it would seem the daughter Delarese spoke of Little Ruff's intent on going to the Foray Logos. It's not long before Rawline's notes quite quickly skip to their venture there. I've only entered the wise quarter of Absalom and the magnificence that is the Great Library a handful of times, but even Telford's dry, disconnected notes drip around the edges with a sort of eager excitement I felt each time. Unsurprisingly, the strict policies that enforce the Scholar's Law of old are still in place, and Arthur chose to leave his dear Godku at the entrance. Normally, I'd scoff at such a decision over the behavior of one's animal companion, but I've had to keep a watchful eye on that here-seen menace whenever they have visited my shop. It was upon proper admission to the Foray Logos that the strange tale and adventure I was anticipating truly began. A librarian spotted Arthur immediately and had a note left behind for him from his own nephew. Though it seems the contents were worrisome and filled with vague warnings, including a mention of the Whispering Reeds itself, it would seem Raphael sought to retread and leave a trail of his efforts, giving the crew two leads to follow simultaneously. And follow they did, along the path of the Star Watch detectives of old, to the genealogy section, where the ancient recording rod seems to have resonated with the room in which its scene was originally recorded. The scene repeated itself, but with more and an additional ending. A mysterious mention of what ought to have been an urban myth of the time. Something called the Delarese. It would also seem at this point that the name and the inn finally piqued Telford's interest. As it does mine.
Hello, and welcome back, listeners, to Stemming the Tide. That's right, we're back. Episode 100 continues tonight. You know, I was just thinking the other day, DVDs, we all had them. You remember those things?
I sure do.
I sure do remember them. I don't know that I actually owned any.
A kind of video disc that was digital, yeah?
Duncan, you're onto it. Yeah. Now, guys, I don't know if you remember, but if you fell asleep and or got drunk and woke up, the title screen would just play the same song over and over and over again. Are there any songs in your life from DVDs or other media that are just burned into your memory? Cam, go.
GoldenEye N64 just absolutely will always be the number one banger. Just does not miss. Like, I've heard trap remixes of it that still, like, get the people going. Like, it just, chef's kiss. They didn't need to go that hard, but I'm glad they did.
Yep.
I believe you're specifically referring to the pause music, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Pause music type.
I wholeheartedly agree.
Yeah, that's a good one.
Played GoldenEye.
And back in the day, like, music files had to be so small because the cartridge had such little memory that they were all, like, at the most 12 seconds long. Well, not really, but, you know. On that note, I was playing a lot of Final Fantasy Tactics recently. I don't know if you played much Final Fantasy Tactics, but you spend a lot of time in menus, and every menu in that game has the exact same music. And if you've played that game, you just had a fucking panic attack.
I like the fact that Dunk tied it all together with "on that note." I really appreciate that.
Hey.
Hey.
I haven't played Final Fantasy Tactics. Is it worth it?
No. Oh, my God. Okay. I mean, it's really, really good. It's really, really RNG heavy. For the second time, RNG. I stopped playing it about 10 years ago.
It's rough RNG.
Like, there's a certain points where you can really fuck up and save in between battles, like a bunch of sequential battles. And I fucked up 10 years ago, stopped playing because I had to start it all over. And then I made the exact same fuck up like a week ago. And I am just, anybody that knows the Wiigraph fight when you're underground and no. Fuck you.
I've done the exact same thing, and it's why I've never beat Final Fantasy Tactics. I saved it there, could not get out, and just put it down and walked away forever.
Yeah.
That's hilarious. I was playing a mobile game that I downloaded, and I actually spent some money on a mobile game for once, and I did the exact same thing. I saved in an impossible situation. And I'm just like, well, I'm never going back to the beginning. I'm not going to do that intro again. Fuck it.
Yeah.
I've never been able to get into the isometric style, like, turn-based games. I've never been very good at them. But on the Final Fantasy theme of this topic, Final Fantasy VII is my favorite game of all time. I love even all of its cheesy peripheral games. And I regularly get those sorts of songs stuck in my head.
Oh,
I
hell
played
yeah.
that game an unbelievable amount of times. When I was a kid, I just on rinse and repeat, and just that opening. One of my favorite things
about
the game
is
it's got that silent opening, like menu screen, but then that opening theme of the which is like throughout all of Final Fantasy, but the Final Fantasy VII one is just my favorite, and I love it.
The boss music in VII, oh my god, like Those Who Fight Further, I think it's called. I used to like that first big green dinosaur that you fight when you have Sephiroth with you. I used to like pause it there and just listen to that track over and over.
Yeah. There was my little brother growing up, we were playing with action figures and stuff, and he would try and sing that song while playing with his action figures, but he would be like, da-la-da-la-da-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la. And anyone who knows that song, it's just the funniest. It's a good song, but he would ruin it, like, running around the house. I'd be like, stop singing the song, you've ruined it.
James?
I'd be remiss if I didn't give an honorable shout out to the Halo chorus.
Oh, God.
So good.
Yeah, that's another
so
one.
Good. You got everyone on that one.
Yeah.
That one's a classic. It has to be Doom as my favorite one, like the original 1993 open menu first level song. Like that metal ass chiptunes.
Thrash
that they had to make, they had to make it fit on a shareware floppy drive. It's my favorite game, or one of my favorite games, and that song is up there. But I will be walking through everyday life, and I will just hear the Pokemon battle music. Like, it will just start playing in my head, and it will not be triggered by anything. Just, it's like a ghost sound that sometimes I just hear that you're about to enter a battle, red, blue, silver and gold, that sound effect. I hear it all the time.
James, are you sure you're not just making eye contact with people?
No, I don't make eye contact with anyone if I can help it. When you make eye contact with a stranger, it invites them to have a conversation with you, and that's not what I want. Yeah, so, and like, I'll be playing the games. Like, I frequently replay the games now, and I'll hear the battle music start, and the battle won't have started. Like, it's actually just a ghost sound that my brain puts out sometimes. Like,
oh, wow.
like a burned in image on an old CRT screen. James just has the Pokemon battle music going on all the time.
That's legitimately how it feels some days. Like some weeks are worse than others, but yeah, it's just a sound that exists somewhere in the dormant subconscious of my brain that just plays randomly every now and again.
I want to study your brain for science.
A creepy old man didn't like hand you a Pokedex years ago and is waiting for you to return, huh?
Actually, not Dad? To mention it.
Yeah. Oh, jeez. I should probably feed him.
Oh, boy.
Oh, cool.
A shout out as my answer is there is a Final Fantasy composer, and sorry if I butcher this, Soken Masayoshi. And he did some of like the really famous Final Fantasy songs. And he went on stage in this huge like performance. And there's a grand piano behind him. And he's supposed to be performing one of his like most iconic songs. And he goes out there with this like these two instruments called, actually, I don't even remember what they're called, but they're like fake saxophones. And there's a woman playing the piano beautifully, and he's playing these shitty fake saxophones and then like singing in a bad voice, but it was all just a troll, like a bit. And the pianist is like looking at him like, what the fuck is going on? And it is a hilarious video. So check that out. And then my other shout out is to the DVD menu when you're past that title screen and you're just trying to watch that DVD logo smash into the very edge of your screen.
Oh, hell yeah.
I spent many a hungover morning staring at that.
When you say edge, you mean the corner, right?
Like the DVD, yeah, you the heard DVD me. Player. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah, it would like bounce saver. Around like the old Windows screen.
You're hoping you'll hit the corner, yeah.
If you were hungover enough, you could like feel the thing hit the side and it would.
100%.
Speaking of hitting the sides, what's coming out of this pit, Freeman?
Oh, hey, whoa. Speaking of listening to repetitive and boring things, hey, Freeman, why don't you take it away?
Oh, take a care
point.
I'd
give you a hair point if y'all weren't stocked up. Amazing. No, but seriously, I honestly do have one extra point, despite that wonderful segue, is I've had three songs repetitively stuck in my head since I was in my early 20s. Three different songs have taken through. The first one was the Indiana Jones theme. I have no idea why. That was stuck in my head for years. It got swapped out with Auld Lang Syne, which was so stuck in my head that I went and found the original Gaelic lyrics and learned them at one point, just so I wasn't going out of my mind. And that has...
So you weren't going out of your mind.
And that was most recently, in the last two or three years, switched out for Oh Danny Boy, which is still stuck
that
in my head.
That fucking sucks.
I love Oh Danny Boy. It is a.
I'm glad you're still alive, Freeman, because I probably wouldn't be.
those are the three songs. That's good. That's all you need.
And who knows what the fourth will be? But it's like since my early 20s, I'm now in my mid to late 30s. Three songs always in my head, just taking turns.
I'm just never gonna try to do a segue again.
We're not good at it, so.
It was good. It was setting it up. But don't step on my motherfucking toes, Cam.
Oh, I was more talking about Freeman, like, coming over both of us, coming off the top with just like, actually, I have three more things to say.
Oh, by the way. No, I had one more thing to say in three parts.
A real actually moment here.
Tips his fedora.
His trilby, yeah.
M'lady. Let's Rides get off back on his to... Heelys. let's get back to the game then. Most recently, you have just witnessed the proper final bit of the recording core that you had found on Raphael's body. In this crazy library room, this circular pit in the center. And as the recording core shuts down on that note of, what was it? We we can't be talking about the Della Reese, you know, that crazy sort of sudden reveal. There's this resonance in the room as it shuts down, as if the room sort of remembers this moment. And you can feel it sort of bounce and tingle across your bodies. You can feel the hairs and goose pimples raise on your arms. And you suddenly see another image that's not being produced by the recording rod and the core. And you see this staff-wielding sort of man at the edge of the circle opposite you. And he sort of walks up, and it's the same sort of ethereal, spectral kind of vision of the rod. He steps up to the edge and kind of looks in, and holding his staff out to one side, arms kind of spread wide, he looks down and deep. And then just falls forward into the hole. And just drops with full confidence into the black depth.
What?
And just as he does, the room pulses and responds again. And you see something else that makes you very much, like, the hairs on everything stand up, especially for Arthur. Because it is the very obvious outline of Raphael on the same spot, standing there looking down, scared as can be, and looking down and wondering how the hell he's going to make the drop. And just as he edges one foot over, like he's dipping his toe into a cold pool, you see the image of a guard just walk out the back room and go like, "No, hey, no, don't do it." And then it scares Raphael, who just turns on his heel and just falls backwards in a panic look, like, "Ah!" Just like comically falls into the pit following the original image. And then the whole room just settles and all of the spectral images disappear.
Wow. Okay, clarification real quick. So, the first thing came off of the recording, and then the other two essentially seemed like that, but it was more spectral, and that was nothing to do with the recording, correct?
Yeah, it seems as though, because the recording gave you extra while being in the space that it was recorded, it mm-hmm. seemed to have this resonant connection to the room, which then seems to have given you other memories connected by the same type of magic that seemed to have been held within the room.
Did you all see that?
Yes, I did. And there's a lot of reason to just run and jump into the pit right now, I think.
And what would those be?
Well, it seems to be the way forward, because we know Raphael did not die here, because his body was bloodied, brought to us at your club, correct?
Aelin kind of shoots a look over at Arthur, and then returns his gaze to Talford and says, "We don't know how he died."
I think it's in character enough that Talford would have looked over Raphael to see how he died.
You did at one point yeah. look over, and he had very similar wounds to what you experienced from the strange hound creature that attacked you.
Oh, bitch. Okay, sorry. Scratch all that from the record.
but keep it in the edit.
You're right. He must not have perished. But there might be more to it. We should be careful.
And Arthur perhaps remembers one of the last lines in the most recent note from Raphael.
Aelin, looking at Talford, watches Talford's eyes dart to Arthur standing in front of him, and his fists clench for a second before relaxing.
Does Arthur chime in about what he remembers from the note?
Yeah, I was hinting, so I'm sure James is looking.
First thing Arthur's going to do is throw up a detect magic just to see if there's anything in the neighborhood that he's not aware of. Like, obviously, this is a magic book well, but is there anything in beyond that? You know, he's trying to filter out that particular magic. So he'd be looking for some sort of, like, evocation or enchantment for, like, Featherfall or something like that.
Right. Yeah. Sure, yeah. So, yeah, the obvious, you know, the whole of Foray Logos is just rife with magic, as you know. For those who might get the reference, it's like an extreme version of Hogwarts Castle. Like, there are just hidden treasure troves and passages and everything built within this mega structure that are impossible to fit in. And it's kind of like just brimming with that sort of labyrinthine kind of magic. So trying to remove all of that, you know, is a bit difficult, but you do actually detect a sort of safety mechanism built into the well for anyone who falls in. Of course, why wouldn't they do that? However, most recently coming in here, you saw it was under maintenance. They're building a rail because apparently people have been recently going in a little bit more than usual, so they still wanted to prevent any recovery or something like that. Yeah, you detect some sort of safety measure built in.
Krugga, being the only one with dark vision, would like to take a peek down there and see what he can't gander.
Oh, it goes as much farther than your dark vision could ever imagine.
Even if he squints real hard?
Even if he squints real hard.
God, the desire for time. Like, I'm fighting my own intrusive thoughts and not just push Krugga in the hole right now. Like, goddamn.
Okay, so Aelin is just going to begin to kind of walk away from the group. And what is what do the walls of this room look like? I know there's books down below, and I see some pillars in the circular room.
The walls are pretty clean. There are pillars all around the circle, yeah, and there is some sort of fancy lights, and everything's kind of decadent, and the floor is, you know, this covered this beautiful, like, leaf-like but almost fiery imagery as well. But otherwise, the books are all in the pit, not on the walls, no shelves in the walls.
That's where I like books, being buried in a pit.
Arthur will touch one bulk or less. He will reach up, pull the bow from his back, touch it, cast light upon it, and look to his companions.
The last line of the note said, "But plunge you must."
And he will step off the ledge.
As he's about to go, Aelin is like, and just reaches out, and he just slips away into the darkness. Well, not into the darkness with his light, but
you watch Raphael just fall off and just go straight down the hole and just fuck. That's gonna be it's gonna be a whole thing the whole time.
Sorry.
Yeah, no, it's good. Good, catch it. Yeah, and you watch Raphael. Fuck!
God damn it.
Son of and a bitch.
Talford will, as watches Raphael leap off the side, watches fucking Raphael. God damn
it. Oh my God, you.
Hang on, hang on, hang
on. Okay, Talford that was too
watches,
good.
It was. Talford watches Arthur step off the side, takes a deep drag of his cigarette, flicks it off over the edge, and jumps after him to catch the cigarette.
So just so I get this straight, Talford threw a lit cigarette into an endless pile of old dusty books. Love it. This is the energy I needed today.
Talford didn't go, fuck. So just after Arthur drops into the pit and Talford follows shortly, yeah, you just see like the quick descent into the blackness, and just eventually whatever light is on them just disappears, and then you know, same with the cigarettes and Telfer, just gone. It's not long. It's just very quick. It's a very quick drop.
As soon as Arthur steps off the ledge, Kruga is going to start counting to himself and what he thinks are perfect seconds, but they are not. and he's going to get to how long, you know, if he waits like 10, 15 seconds. Or
one,
just,
one and a half, well, 2 3/4.
That's thud. And after what I'm guessing is...
1 Otari, 2 Otari, 3 Otari.
Let my boy cook. Why are you talking over him?
And then realizing he doesn't know how to count, he steps off.
Aelin?
Aelin just watches them go, breaks the fourth wall, and says, "A leap of faith," and then drops down.
Good one!
You all fall into this black pit. There are countless unimaginable shelves filled with an unbelievable amount of books as you go and you go and you descend. And as you fall, the wind that hits you at first very slowly dissipates. You no longer feel this gushing of rushing air past you, no longer feeling friction after a certain point. And you find yourselves almost meeting, despite the fact that Arthur dropped in first and Telford second. You suddenly are much closer than you ought to be as a group. The darkness surrounds you quickly, and you have this feeling of weightlessness that takes over the feeling of gravity's descent instead. The darkness suddenly recedes after a certain amount of time as well, and slightly and slowly you see this soft glow that begins to form where you thought was once below you, but your directions are suddenly becoming muddled. And this, very suddenly, a sizable piece of broken stone zips past you all. And then another, and then another. And none of them seem to be coming towards you, but it gives you a bit of a sense of worry. And you see far below, there is this set of structures that seem to take form in the glow. And more crumbled but obviously worked stone passes by you. And a scene seems to present itself in this very, very strange environment as this structure rushes closer. And there are bridges and there are towers and there's such gigantic clockwork cogs that seem to be all locked together coming towards you. And there's this intense glowing light that seems to usurp and display everything. This is when you see a small figure upon one of the pathways ahead. The stones keep coming by, and you can hardly tell if you are properly descending or if this strange and twisted space is racing towards you. And whichever it is, suddenly you begin to slow, and a platform along a bridge seems to position itself for your eventual landing. And as you instinctually ready yourself for the unnerving reality of said landing, a second figure suddenly appears next to the first, as if from nothingness, appears from thin air. And the first figure, a man holding a staff, robed in elegant Osiriani garb, the one that just sort of turns quickly to see the one that appeared next to him, one that is dressed in a motley array of colors, an elaborate head wrap and a head wrap around its head and a kerchief around their face. And as instantly as the latter appeared, they stumble from their feet and fall into the crumbling railing of this bridge. And you can hear an audible cracking of the ribs, and there's a bit of the stone that falls away. And this robed man, the first one, turns with this incredible surprise at the sudden appearance of this creature. And that's when you become very close to the platform, and you start to land down. And now you've grabbed the attention of the robed man, who, you know, is looking at this sudden appearance of the creature, and then seeing you descend. And it's this very confusing situation. And you are find yourself in this scene of, you know, akin to M.C. Escher, with these twisting platforms and things breaking in this impossible landscape. And you see the robed man standing with a straight and confident posture, staff in his hand, but apparently no need for it as an aid. And approaching, he approaches the figure that just appeared, who is clutching the stone wall that's just cracked its ribs. And he keeps his eyes on you, though, while speaking to this creature. And despite the distance and the space of this place, you can hear it as if it's next to you. And you hear the voice of the roadman say,
"Already? Clearly I've overestimated you."
And the creature that's crumpled over just says,
"This place... oh, I'd forgotten. No, it's not what you think." "Really? And how is that now? You and I spoke just minutes ago." No. It's been much longer for me. I can't believe this connection still exists. Shafkin. Belcora is dead."
As the character known as Shachem, eyes still focus on all of you, but there's an obvious tone of derision being cast at the panting creature before him.
He says, "Impossible. It's too soon."
The creature responds,
"Just listen. How can you assume time in this place? After what you've done, the vaults went into chaos just after the attack."
Shachem says,
"Attack! We attacked! No! We were attacked by some band of upstart heroes. Upstart heroes! Upstart heroes did this to you!"
His face is outrage, and hatred pours from his eyes as he gestures with a nod toward all of you. The weakened creature then slowly turns to see what Shafkum is looking at and catches the sight of you, a pained look coming across his eyes and brow. And they say,
No, not them. It's not them. "So you ran. The inevitable chaos of the vaults did this to you. Worst yet, you led them here. I knew it was a risk to trust you. Who are you upstarts? What makes you think you can interfere here now?"
He says to all of you.
Two things.
Yeah.
Just for me, is this second person the Motley Man?
Yes.
Okay. Clearly our characters don't know that. Second thing, as Aelin lands, because I'm wearing Jack's tattered cape, when I leap, high jump, or long jump, I get a +1 item bonus of stealth checks when I hide or sneak until the start of next turn. So, as Aelin lands, he rolls to behind one of these crumbled banisters and hides with a +1.
Amazing. I will let you have that +1 into your initiative roll when you roll stealth for it. Amazing. That's so good.
I'll never use it, so there we go.
Hero point. You can't use. But across from this, quite this chasm, like, you know, you're 140 feet away or so, but you can hear this everything around you is filled. It's basically blackness. There is blackness as far as you can see in any direction other than this strange infrastructure that doesn't make sense. And 140 feet away or so, you hear this like it's next to you, like you're having a conversation with someone right in front of you, and Shafkin has now addressed you. "What are you doing here?" And is accusing you of being said upstart heroes that the Motley Man has warned him about.
Telford will finish the cigarette on the way down.
So I just love the idea that you caught it. You threw it in.
No, that was intentionally what I was going. Yeah, just absolutely. Like, smoking it. Like,
yes. I love that. It's so good.
Telford will finish his cigarette that he caught on the way down, flicking it to the ground, stamping it out with a boot, before holding a finger up to Shafkin and looking into his weird robe, coat, sweater, cardigan thing, and pulling out another cigarette with a flick of a snap of his fingers, lighting it, taking another deep inhale.
First of all, I can assure you that I'm no hero. So let's just get that one out of the way. You seem like a learned man, yes?
Yes.
Very well. That will make this easy. Surely I can appeal to your logic and reason. We are here for information about a murder and a mystery involving the esoteric. And the sooner you can point us to where we need to go, the sooner we can get out of your hair, or lack thereof, and get to what we need to do and both be on our ways.
So you can see the man at a distance from you very much has hair, is not the mummified version that you would have heard of, that Lump would have heard of. Getting it all mixed up here. Or that all of you players would have encountered. Very, very different form.
Is this the same wizard that went down the hole that we saw up above right before we jumped?
It absolutely is. 100%.
Okay, I should have zoomed in further, but looking at the token art, he did not have hair. But if I zoom in far enough, I can see hair. My bad.
Yeah. No, all good. He's got a high forehead.
Got a real five head situation.
Yeah. And he sort of just cocks an eyebrow at your statements there, as if, like, you know, trying to puzzle what he believes has happened and kind of connect them to the words you've just spoken. And it doesn't seem to be adding up to him.
Telford will sigh.
I suppose. Let's be civilized and polite here for a moment. My name is Telford Rawline of the House Rawline. I come seeking information regarding this Shuni's deceased nephew, right? Nephew,
as he sees Arthur nod.
We've been sent on a mission of sorts involving Star Watch agents. And the sooner we get done with this, the sooner I can find something else to pique my interest. What is your name?
And he just sort of narrows his eyes and looks down at the Motley Man. He says,
I can't believe things have gone awry so soon. What are these creatures? Speaking of the Star Watch of all things.
And the Motley Man says,
No, just stop talking about time. It's not what you think. Save it, Agent of Lang. I'll hear no more of it. You are a self-serving coward like the rest of your kind, overconfident in your planar connections, and you have paid for it. Please, Shafka, my connection to the plateau is severed here. I can't.
The Motley Man sort of makes a beleaguered motion towards the churning light that you can see at this tower in this terrain and this sort of like area. And as he does, Shafkum just kicks him in the ribs, just kicks him to the floor. You can hear another audible crack and there's big, just this wheeze. Like, and Shafkum says,
You won't anymore, Isonde Kalir. This space betwixt time and dreams will be your grave.
And he takes his staff, winds it up, and smashes him in the face, following through and pushing part of the stone railing out of the way. Just the wall just crumbles on the from the force, and the Motley Man, Yasson Clear, just ragdolls down into the depths below, and you could see him drop onto a massive set of gears, and as he hits them with a audible thud well below, they just jerk into motion and start to spin, and they drag his body into connections with other gears and just tear him to fucking smithereens. Just rip him apart. And Shafkum just raises his staff towards you and says,
You will be stopped here and now. And whatever damage you have done, this will be payment.
Roll for initiative.
So I guess it's safe to assume that this is not going to be a con. Oh, I see. You're doing the threatening thing. Oh, okay.
Yeah. All right, let's do this. Let's get some initiative. Telford, you were prominent in that. What'd you get?
Telford rolled a 15 for a 30.
All right. Krugga, taking a back seat.
Krugga, seeing that guy go flying, will have a 29. Shouts out, oh, there's some evil machinery down there. It could be a literary device.
Oh, son of a biscuit.
I believe that's called foreshadowing.
Aelin?
Also a 15 for a 30 with my sweet little plus one.
Oh, a little plus one. Okay, who's got the higher bonus on that?
Players can just choose between each other. It doesn't go down to initiative modifier.
Well, we've always done it by initiative modifier, so...
Plus 14.
15.
Yeah, okay. So you go.
All right, and finally Arthur.
Arthur got a 23.
23, okay. Arthur probably reasonably distracted. I mean, a cleric, but also probably reasonably distracted. No goat coo to help out at this long distance map. And just dove in after the shadow of his nephew. And top of the round one, Shafkum's turn. Who spends an action summoning a creature with summon entity level 5, or rank 5, I suppose. And on the bridge, a little bit ahead of you, pops up this creature.
Oh.
Ooh, yucky.
This big-mouthed, big-toothy, purple-tongued creature with 3 barbed tentacles and 3 weird legs. And there's like eyes on the tentacles, just pops out, and just this big slobbering mouth is like, and stands between you and Shafkum now.
I got some books to take back upstairs.
And that's going to be Shafkum's turn. Talford, you're up.
Talford takes the hand holding his cigarette and takes a deep inhale before.
I thought you stamped it out already.
I lit another one.
Oh,
another one.
Of course you did.
A chain smoker. Telford is not.
Yeah. This episode is sponsored by Philip Morris.
Anyways, we'll remove the hand from his cigarette and start shaking it just slowly at first. Just, bah, bah. You can kind of hear the fingers clacking together before you start seeing this viscous, gel, fleshy, lipid momentum building up around it that eventually flicks to the floor, and you see him cast Spectral Hand.
Oh, okay.
And then last action is going to go ahead and cast Shield on himself.
Okay. So semi-corporeal hand just like appears next to you?
Yep.
Okay. Aelin, what do you got?
I would like to move my token 5 feet forward here, as I expressly said he moved during that whole landing.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. That's fine, yeah.
Okay, so I'm behind the banister at the top of the stairs, and I will delay.
Okay, delaying. Krugga?
Okay. This is a really big fucking map.
It's a big map, yeah. Very different than the usual.
All of this braggadocious shit I was saying about the speed of this monk is just really not seeming too impressive right now.
He's still got a 40 speed though, right?
Oh yeah, yeah. He's got, but I mean, you don't run in all by yourself and then be all by yourself and get completely murked. Yeah. So, let's do a recall knowledge on this thing.
Okay, on the creature in front of you. Give me an occultism.
Ooh, actually not too bad in occultism. Actually, okay. A really bad roll in occultism. That was...
You got loads of hero points if you want to spend them.
Yeah, I'm going to hero point that. Even worse, with a 6 or 13.
Nah, you don't know what this thing is.
It's got a mouth. It wants to feed.
Yeah. I'll give you this, actually. Given the weird properties of this room with sound, I'll actually give you a little extra something else. You can already smell from this distance a really brutal stench coming off of it, and you think that when you get closer, it's going to affect you.
Oh, it sounds like it smells terrible. 40 feet stride to the north, and he will enter the dragon stance.
Dragon stance. I love it. Arthur of Erastil.
Arthur, with his first action, is going to, free action, he's going to lick one of his toes, hold it out to try and get a sense of any wind in this area.
There is none. There is none.
He is then going to knock and loose an arrow from his longbow, because this creature is exactly within his 100 feet range increment.
Longbow, baby! I love it, okay?
Hell yeah.
That is a natural 20 for a
30. Oh, baby!
That's obviously going to hit. Give me a crit damage. Holy shit.
31 points of piercing.
Ooh,
yeah, baby.
Amazing.
That's a lot of damage.
31 damage. Bam, you pierce this thing, and it just starts to wriggle and scream. Like, just like the tentacles and the tongue are like writhing all around all of a sudden.
He is then going to whisper into the shaft of his bow. This is a reaction with a mental trait. Be calm, friend, as he activates the pacifying trait of this +1 striking longbow. This is a DC 20 will save, or you are pacified, and pacification is a -2 to attack rolls that are non-lethal for 1 minute.
Attack rolls that are non-lethal or that are lethal?
Aren't non-lethal. Are not non-lethal.
Aren't non-lethal. Okay. Okay. 16. I rolled terribly.
For the next 6 rounds, you have a -2 to attack rolls that are lethal.
Wow.
Yeah.
Ooh, what a turn. Oh, shit.
Yeah, that was sick as fuck. Only...
You still have 1 action left, are you?
Yeah. No, I've got 2 actions left.
Oh, you got 2 actions left. God damn it.
Yeah, that's 1 action and a reaction. And then he will whisper into his bow again, with the power of Erastil, come up behind. And behind this creature is going to be this ethereal green bow as he casts spiritual weapon.
Hey,
yes, nice. There it is.
That's a lot of damage.
All right, 2 action cast that, and it gets to attack right away?
It certainly does, yeah.
Oh,
I believe this has the map -5.
And you have the range to do that, to cast it in that spot?
120 feet.
Perfect.
Brilliant.
That's an 18 to hit.
That is a miss, I'm afraid.
Hero point.
Hey.
That is also an 18 to hit. Turn over.
Meant to be. No. Okay, I do like the idea of Arthur getting there, licking his like paw, and it just gets a little bit wetter as he holds it out.
You just see drool come off his paw,
yeah.
Until he grips that bowstring.
That's going to be top of round 2, unless you want to enter in here, Aelin?
No.
Nope. Okay. And the creature that's there is now going to... move forward and heading towards Kruga, and it actually is going to move twice. It starts barreling its way towards Kruga, and that's going to be its turn, whilst Shafkum disappears, vanishes before your eyes. And that's Telfer's turn.
All right, Telford will stride forward 30 feet to be southwest of Kruga, and then is going to unleash Psyche, and is going to cast an amped imaginary weapon at both the creature closest and the same square that he last saw Shafkin at.
Okay.
And it is going to be slashing damage. So I will be able to make 2 imaginary weapon attacks through amped imaginary weapon. So,
okay.
First one, plus 12, is a 21 to hit the creature closest to me.
That's a hit.
All right, and then it is going to be 38 points of damage.
38 points of damage.
Yeah.
Big ol' hit. Yeah, you slash the thing, it starts screaming more and writhing around.
Okay, and then same square as Shafkin. Okay. Oh, God, that was real bad. That is a 3 for a 15. I'm going to go ahead and hero point that. Wait, okay. Actually, does
you
it...
Still have to do a, you still have to do a flat check, yep.
Okay, I'm not going to announce what I just rolled. That is a 13 on the flat check.
Okay.
And then a natural 20 on the attack roll.
Ooh.
Ooh. Ooh. That's that smooth skin. That's that 5d8 plus 10 crit damage.
Hot damn.
That's 42 for 84 points of damage.
Jesus, oh my God.
Christ.
Oh. Oh my God.
Oh yeah.
And you hear an audible.
Oh yeah.
No big deal.
Yeah.
Fucking right.
Can you just quickly walk me through how this, how you're able to do that in two, like two different spots at the same time? Like,
spectral hand allows me to deliver touch spells at range.
Right.
So that's why I can imaginary weapon at range.
But you don't have to. It's not like an old, the old mage hand where you don't have to put the hand somewhere.
The hand does have to move.
The hand does have to move.
Yep.
Okay.
So if the creature closest to us has attack of opportunity, they can absolutely destroy the hand before this goes off.
So you had the hand next to you.
The hand was next to me. It can move 120 feet in a round.
Right.
So if I'm within 120 feet of Shafkin, which I am.
You are. Yeah.
Then I can attack the Utyug, and then the hand can scamper on along to deliver the second part of the imaginary weapon. Because it says, let me read it off verbatim. Amped. You form multiple force weapons to lash out at multiple foes. You make two imaginary weapon strikes, each against a different target. Your multiple attack penalty doesn't increase until you've made both strikes.
Hot damn.
Meow.
Diggity damn.
Freeman, you did it to yourself.
The action economy doesn't account for the you moving and then striking and then that spectral hand moving and then striking again?
The spectral hand is not sustained or anything like that. It's just a spell. Here you go. Here's right. Your hand. Go deliver
touch spells.
And it's amped,
spells. Right?
Wild.
It is. No, yeah. The spectral hand is not amped. But the
it's kind of why I'm wondering about it, but I'm not questioning it too hard because I know it's amped and I don't know psychics very well. So I'm like, I
so
the
like this. This is definitely
ridiculous.
In the gray area because yeah. I don't know if they accounted for this interaction of spectral hand allowing you to reach out and touch face 120 feet away for a
right.
Spell that's ostensibly touch.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Or
yeah.
Melee.
I mean, whatever. I'm allowing it because we're having fun here.
Yeah. Thank you. I appreciate
it. But it's just cool. It's just cool. Aelin, it's your turn now. You wasted a whole round.
Delay.
Is Aelin even contributing here?
No, he is. He is moral support. I like to think he's like, fuck you, Talford. And Talford just gets angrier, and that's what fucking sets him over the edge to critical strength.
Good news, it doesn't like being attacked, he yells. Well, running at it full speed. He's just going to go straight up, and hopefully it doesn't have an AOO, because he's going to try to stride around to the top. The northeast corner is exactly 40 feet.
Oh, I need to... sorry, I need a quick forest you'd save from me, please.
Oh, yeah, that thing stanks.
What's the range on the stink? Because it might matter for me.
It might actually matter for you, yeah. Let me just
what's the range
check.
On that stank?
How foul that stank.
Yeah, Talford, roll me one as well.
And that's going to be the second hero point of the day because that was a natty one.
Okay.
I got a 26.
And a 21.
Okay. 26 and 21, you're fine. You're both fine. But it is a 40-foot aura, just so you know. So that's that big.
Oh.
It stank.
Smells like gym socks, and I love bad cheese, he says. Well, striking out. Well, he's going to attempt to knock down.
Jim?
Long story. Attempt a knockdown, two-action knockdown. So first will be an unarmed dragon tail.
Unarmed dragon tail, go.
19 to hit. That sucks.
That's a miss.
And let me just double check my knockdown here. That's it then. His first attack didn't hit. No trip.
Worth a try though, Arfur.
Oh, it's Aelin time.
Hey. Okay. Round and a half Aelin, later.
What do you got?
So, popping out from behind this decrepit, crumbling banister, he comes flying down the stairs, double moves to be within flanking of Krugga.
Okay, for a two, please.
Fine.
It's when you enter the aura.
Ooh, I will hero point that.
Man, this thing has a pervasive stink. It is killing us.
Ooh, even worse. So that's a 12.
Okay, you are sickened one.
I rolled a 13 and a 12, listeners.
Instead of plugging just his nose, he opened his nostrils.
Just glad you didn't critically fail. That's all I'm saying. You're a sickened one.
That's true. And then he will strike out against this off-kilter? Wait. What is it called now?
Off guard. Off guard.
Off guard opponent.
Close out. Off kilter with Starfinder.
28 to hit.
That hits.
And that will be 8 points of damage, brutal damage, with the elven curved blade.
Doesn't matter because you slice into this thing as it's flanked with Krugga, and it, as you do, you see blood splatter, but then all just disappear as this summoned creature vanishes before your eyes.
Ooh, Aelin, you didn't do anything this common.
So yeah, sensitive. You ganked the kill. Got it.
Kill's killing.
Kill's a kill, baby.
Oh, wait. Actually, probably edit that out. I'm sorry. That was
count it.
I had a gamer moment. I had a gamer moment. Leave me alone.
And that brings us to Arfur Rastel.
GG,
with
me.
With no particular target.
Yeah. Is this aura of stink? Does he still get whiffs of it? Okay. So first action will be to move 25 feet up the stairs. And then... So what I want to present to you is using the seek action. So traditionally, the seek action is only a 30-foot cone. But since we've already established, at least flavor-wise, that sound travels in this place or doesn't travel, or this is a folding dimension, I would like to use the seek action targeted at this general area with his shuny
ears. Against me. I'll allow it for sure. You just, not only did you see the shaft come disappear and from that spot, but you also saw a flash of this imaginary weapon in this spectral hand attack a spot, and you heard an audible noise. By all means, give me a seek.
It's a 25.
You are reasonably sure Shafkum is in the same spot.
Okay, that is also within that 120 feet, so he will last action sustain, move the spiritual weapon up next to him, and attack with it.
Okay. Attack roll and flat check, please.
Flat check is a 4.
Okay. Miss.
Yeah, I'll use a spend the hero point.
Okay.
Hey, keep the economy moving.
That's an 11.
Flat check. Okay, flat check 11. And what was your attack roll?
22.
Still a miss. You know, you see, you strike air with your spiritual weapon.
That's his turn.
Okay, that's your turn. And then from said space, you hear an audible verbal component being cast out. And then nothing.
What?
Talford, you're up.
Greater invisibility?
Oh, let me just double check. Let me double check the rules on that, Scott. Oh, yeah. No, you're right. Hold on. So it's invisibility until... Well, no, it's invisibility until you take a hostile action, right?
If it's defensive spell, you're fine.
Yeah, no, it's good. Yeah, that's it.
Okay.
You see
okay.
Nothing.
Just keeping you honest.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you. Appreciate it. They don't play Spellcaster's Punch. what do you got, Cam?
I'm going to go ahead and cast Astral Rain. And you watch as Talford strides forward northeast 30 feet before calling books down from the shelves above him in a psychic maelstrom of astral rain before crashing it down. So, amped, and then...
Okay. Okay. Astral rain cantrip. Amazing. And it's... How big is this area?
It was only a 5-foot burst.
Okay. So 5-foot burst on the area.
Yep. Hey, you got it.
Yeah, and just this mass, like this furious, like sort of massive, like rain just kind of plops down and really only seems to hit the astral weapon of Arvers.
That is my turn then.
Okay, Krugga.
Krugga, seeing books raining down, basically his worst fucking nightmare. I guess he's just going to have to start fucking marching his way down the bridge.
Okay, starts running down the bridge.
40 feet will get him not quite to the spiritual weapon. Another 40 feet will get him past the spiritual weapon, and then he would like to seek to his east.
Okay, goes for a seek to the east. Roll me a perception. Actually, I'll roll it real quick.
Yeah,
get it out of the way.
You're better at it than me.
Yeah, and you do not detect anything. Okay, you see ahead of you this strange sort of... Not quite an orrery, I forgot the word for it, but it's like a sort of like sphere-like kind of like version of an orrery. I looked it up 2 weeks ago, and I forget what it is now. it's kind of like an astrolabe, but like a 3D one. And there's like this weird floating mechanism near you, but otherwise it just seems to be the only thing in this strange environment that doesn't make any sense. But as you get across the bridge, at the very least, you... Even though it was there the whole time, you see this roiling, glowing light to the north of you in this strange tower that's not quite the right side up. And it's you feel this energy from it. It starts to like almost pull at you at this point. And it's kind of like draws your attention. Maybe that's why you didn't quite find your target.
Okay. Well, I guess mouth agape, he will just start staring at that thing and drooling.
Yeah, there you go.
Aelin will move essentially 45 feet forward and take cover behind a banister.
Okay. Taking cover, Arfur.
He will attempt to seek again, just closing his eyes, listening.
Okay.
The 19.
Nope, you don't know. This place, the grinding of the gears below are still going. Perhaps you catch a couple more little bits of Son Kalir's crunching bones. This light to the north is oddly not making any noise despite its churning. It's a very obvious churning. But you mostly just catch the hurried footsteps of your comrades.
Okay, he will sustain the spiritual weapon and attempt to hit the same spot that he thought he was in. Shafram was in last time.
Okay.
It's a 5 on the flat check. And a 30 to hit.
Hey.
And it's a miss. You don't hit strike true.
Did Freeman just say a 30 missed?
The flat check. He's not there. The flat check missed.
The flat check.
Okay. Okay. Okay.
Yeah. Got yeah.
Cam's panicking.
I was deeply worried.
Back up the pit. Back up the pit.
Last action. I guess he'll attempt another seek. That one's a 30.
Still no idea. Same deal.
It is possible that our quarry has retreated, friends. I do not hear him any longer.
I see.
I don't.
Continue forward.
Top of round 4, and Krugga. Oh no, hold on. What's your fortitude DC?
My fortitude DC is a 23.
Okay.
I don't like what you're getting up to over there.
As a suddenly, Shafkum appears at the far end, around this corner, near next to the churning light. And you can see, like, you have to kind of loop around across the bridge you're at to get to him. But he just waves his staff around, suddenly appears in front of you, and sends it, points his staff at you, and then pulls it back. And suddenly, you are pulled towards him. And you bang into this wall next to you on the bridge, and it crumbles as you do. And you drop from the bridge onto a staircase below you. As he used telekinetic maneuver,
oof,
you drop down and take 8 points of bludgeoning, which is not so bad.
That's some shoddy masonry.
But I believe you probably land prone as well.
Should I roll for him landing like a cat?
Unless, if you have a feat for it, go for it.
If he took 8 bludgeoning, he'd probably break his ankles trying to land on his feet.
Yeah. And then you see Shackham cast shield on himself as another action. And so he's exposed himself, but he's pulled Krugga down to take some damage. And Telford, you're up.
Telford, seeing the distance grow, is going to do a rooster kick with 1 foot, muttering,
"Gotta go fast, gotta go fast,"
and cast warp step. And I'll give you the flat check.
Oh, okay.
Because stupefy, that is a success. So for our 35, so I'm going to move 70 feet.
Ooh, so many feet.
You know what? Just gonna go ahead and keep it going. Stride another 35 feet, for that far. And, that is Talford's turn.
Okay.
As he sprints across the bridge, dancing over the crumbling masonry, staring over the side.
Krugger, if you could please get off your ass and get in his face, I'd greatly appreciate it.
And you can see, like, even some of the stone that's crumbled away from the being pulled through it is, like, floating in the air and going off in random, like, directions that's not quite proper for a gravitational pull. But there's not much making sense of it. Krugga, you're up. You're prone, but you're up.
Okay, so he spends one action to get up. Spitting out a little bit of blood. He looks at Telford, like, "You call that a sprint?" And then it will be a 40-foot move. Is it just a 40-foot move?
Yeah, that's all you got.
Oh, yeah, 40 feet right up to him.
That was 50. That was 100% 50 feet.
I get a diagonal one.
I watched your ruler.
Okay, well, then it will be...
Oh, no, sorry, you're right.
It was 40. It's because you dragged him and adjusted it, your ruler.
Okay, yeah, your ruler showed me something different, but you're right, it's 40 feet. You get right up in his goodies.
All right, and being goody adjacent, he strikes out with the dragon tail. 26 to hit.
26 hits. Oh, no, it doesn't. Shield, baby.
I started to say fuck yeah, but what I meant was fuck you. Socket burn, that's a turn.
Beautiful. Get up, move, strike, and miss. I love a turn like that. Aelin, what do you got? Way back there.
Okay, follow me with this one here.
Mm-hmm.
Aelin is going to move forward, running at full clip, 25 feet, which brings him, listeners, to an area on this pathway that looks quite crumbled. And in fact, right beside the banister that Freeman said was broken away as Krugga was pulled down.
Mm-hmm.
As my second action, well, as part of a 2-action maneuver, I would like to long jump. So okay. I've strode at least 10 feet, and then now I'm going to make an athletics check, and whatever I roll underneath my movement is how far I go.
Okay.
19. So I'm going to assume
make that a 20 because you're actually no longer sickened.
Ooh, even better. 20. So he will come flying through the air 20 feet and land on that lower staircase.
Okay, you're still going to take some fall damage.
That's okay. Let's do this.
But because you're jumping deliberately, I'm not going to make you drop prone. I've never been really good on the rules in this. We almost never cover this kind of stuff. But you're still going to take like 15 damage. It's everything is deceptive. It's not as far or as close as you think it is, and you drop farther than you expect. You take a good hit, but you land, you know, knee down, bump it, and it hurts. But you are ready to go.
Worth it. And then he continues to move up the stairs, running 25 more feet. So he's within 20 of the guy whose name I can never pronounce.
Shafkim.
I was glad when he was gone back to Osirian because I never had to fuck up his name again. No, so he's gonna bring him back.
Yeah. All right, Arthur.
Arford, first action, he's going to hustle 25 feet up those stairs, seeing his his companions make a move for it. Don't. I'm on my way.
Listeners, he is comically far behind the group.
Like, so far.
We're running up that hill. At least 160 feet.
And his little legs are so short.
Second action, he's going to sustain the spiritual weapon and move it the full 125 feet away from him.
Okay.
And then with his final action, he's going to take a shot with that longbow. It is outside of his range increment at 155 feet.
It's a minus two?
Yeah, I believe so, because its range is 100 feet. It's not out twice outside the range increment.
I think this is the first time I've ever seen the longbow have this problem. It's almost always, oh, I'm within volley range.
Right?
Yeah.
Amazing. I love a big map.
Also, spiritual weapon didn't make it all the way to the enemy, too, which is hilarious.
Wait, well, I can't. It's only 120 feet from Arbor. Yeah. That is a 24 to hit with the minus two.
No dice. Zips past Shafkim's head. All right. Shafkim is up. What do he do? Oh, it's a good question. Krugga, all up in his goodies, is going to cast Hydraulic Push, calling forth a powerful blast of pressurized water. I'm going to make an attack against your AC there, Krugga. It's going to be a 32 to hit.
Yeah, that hits.
Okay, that hit. You are going to take, that's shit, 10 bludgeoning damage, and you're pushed back 5 feet away from Shafkim, and you burst into that corner of the wall, and it crumbles away, and you are going to fall into this sideways tower and off this bridge into this insane, insanely shaped place.
Oh, sweet. Did you get a reflex save to mantle?
Oh, yeah. You know what? Reflex save. Good call. It's grab an edge. Reflex save.
Reflex save into grab an edge.
You didn't get it the first time, but this time I'm definitely going to give it to you because of the way that everything's shaped.
That's a 19.
Yeah, I'll give it to you. Yeah, so you've been knocked down. And you're about to fall down into this like weird stained glass like edge of a tower that's not quite the right angle to represent what it is. But you managed to grab the edge with both hands, so you are dangling there. You'll have to do a climb check to get yourself back up the next time.
Jesus, shades of episode one of this podcast.
Yeah, 100%.
But this time we know that when he pulls himself back up, he will be prone.
Yeah. This time I've got less attachment to the character if he dies.
And Shafkim is going to... Oh, boy. Cast shield again. Shield's going to stay on. And it's Telford.
Telford is going to look at Shafkim and say, you should have moved. And start to cast a spell. And I'm going to give you the flat check. Succeeds. That ends my turn.
Sorry, what did you do? Sorry,
I'm starting to cast a spell. Don't worry about it.
And you failed.
No, I succeeded. I rolled a 12 on my flat check. Fuck you.
In Final Fantasy Tactics parlance, he's sitting there with a little C for charging over his head while he stands there and waits.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I wanted to fucking save it, but I'm casting Inner Radiance Torrent, and that's why I said you should move.
I'm sorry. Yeah. I was just sitting there like, I have no idea what just happened. You're like, I roll a flat check. That's my turn.
To cast
and
a spell.
I'm like, huh?
Yeah, no, I thought that in the interview, I said I'm going to try to cast Inner Radiance Torrent again. So I made the flat check for Stupefy.
I'm very sorry I didn't review your interview before the session. okay, gotcha. You you start prepping a big spell. Gotcha. Karaka, what do you got? Yeah, you're going to have to do a climb check here to get yourself up.
Oh, hell yeah. He's going to have to do a climb check here to get himself up.
You do all kinds of extra actions.
The climb is acrobatics or athletics? Acrobatics.
Athletics.
Oh, thank fuck. 29.
29, that you're totally up. That might even be a crit. Does a crit make you come up without being prone? Scoot, you called it out.
I don't remember, but yes. I feel like, yeah.
I don't think you end up prone while you're climbing.
It is, grab an edge here. Success, a critical success, I think you would just get up. So I think you're all right. I think you climb up, you're good. You have two actions. Go.
Okay, so climbing on to the platform. Krug is going to run up to the north of Shafram. That is as well as I can roll an R that doesn't exist in a name. And take unarmed strike. Extra R's for grr.
Extra R's.
17 to hit. I'm going to use that last hero point because...
All right.
21 to hit.
That's a miss. Okay. Oh, you're rolling bad.
Yep. Yeah. That was worth the wait.
All right. Aelin.
Aelin sprints up the stairs, thus entering off... Oh my god, I'm never going to remember this. Wait, I'm just saying...
You're in a flanking position.
Yeah. Off kilter, in a flanking position.
Off guard. Off guard.
Nope. He strikes out with the elven curved blade.
Flat guarded. Okay.
You're not helping.
We'll use a hero point.
Okay. Oh, jeez. We blew through all of those real quick.
Natty motherfucking 20 for a 35.
Oh, no.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, no.
24 points of slashing damage.
Okay. Sneak attack? No?
Oh, shit. Yeah.
You're a rogue. Don't That's be a right. rogue. This is not a telekinetic projectile here.
Right. Because...
Was that a Freudian slip, or were you deliberately making fun of
Oh,
Scott?
No, I said numbers.
I legitimately can't tell anymore with our group, because I fucking say it, a telekinetic projectile now.
I stumbled over projectile.
And that is going to be... Okay, it's been a while. Do I double?
Yeah, you double it too.
12! An extra 12!
All right. Oh, man. Massive slice. Huge amount of damage. That's crazy.
Okay, and then now, for my last actione, I am going to attempt a perception check to sense motive against my foe's deception DC, or a hard DC of the foe's level, whichever is higher, to use predictable.
Okay.
So, essentially what that does... is, so 24 against your deception DC. Is it a beat?
24 against my deception DC. It is a meat to beat.
Okay, so I deduce the gist of a target strategy.
I'm sorry, hold on. 10 plus my, right? And if I don't have one, it's just my charisma modifier.
No, it's critical. It's not. Nope. It's a very hard versus your CR. So, like, level DC. So, let's say it's 5. It'd be the level DC for 5 plus very hard, which is plus 2, I think. Off the top of my head, I don't remember. I'd have to.
Oh, okay. So I'm not doing it like a PC.
Level based DCs. Okay. So what CR is the creature?
8.
8 would be a 24 off the top, and then very hard would make it even harder, so.
Okay. 24. Damn it. So that makes it a 26 DC.
Son of a biscuit. Is very hard the same as hard? Because it only says hard, not very hard. Anyways, fail, I suppose. So I do not discern the target strategy and gain no benefits. I'm like checking out his moves. I'm like, okay, he's going to do this. No, he's not going to telekinetic projectile.
He's doing it himself.
End of my turn.
Okay, Arthur.
Arthur is going to start by hustling another 25 feet.
So
oh my god, I forgot how far Arthur back is still back there. Oh my god.
He'll sustain the spiritual weapon.
Yeah. The big mouth's actually a bit of a pain.
Okay, so it's in that space. I can't get it to center or go into the other corner.
That's fine, yeah. Doesn't matter.
And then he will attack with the spiritual weapon.
Okay.
It's a 16 to hit.
That's a miss.
Okay, and last action, he will take another pot shot with the longbow. Still outside of the range increment. That's an 18 to hit with a minus 2 is a 16.
Also a miss.
Yeah, I didn't think a 6 on the die was going to do it. But
oh, you had a big opener, but yeah. Not helping you here.
Glad we didn't fight Mummy Shafrem, because apparently would have kicked our asses.
Shafrem is going to just start running. He runs into the entrance. No? Oh god.
Krug is going to use stand still as a reaction.
Yeah, baby, let's go.
Thank you.
What is it?
That's a 29.
Oh shit.
Okay, so I don't disrupt the action, but I do get to hit you a little.
Okay, you get to hit me on the way. Okay.
Less fun, damn. But 24 damage.
24 damage? What? Yep.
You said that so casually for...
What? Well, I mean, I'm used to Krukka. That's pretty low.
For level 6, no. For level true. 6, that's not true. Pretty that low. True, yeah. You're high.
So here's what happens. Is he starts to run past you, and you just whip out a dragon strike and just smash him in the back. He falls face first into the floor and kind of like tumbles forward towards this light. And very suddenly, not so much a spectral image, but perhaps a shadowy one of a little Shuni starts running past you along the edge of this this walkway, and as if like trying to scamper underfoot of all of you, manages to trip up Shafkim and like tumble himself into a wall, and Shafkim kind of like rolls down into the roiling light and the entrance thereof, and kind of gets pulled in, like the light actually pulls him in and absorbs him, and then this shadowy little Shuni kind of turns over his shoulder and notices that the staff that Shafkim was carrying has been dropped in the floor, quickly runs over, kicks it towards you, and then leaps into the light and disappears.
What the fuck?
And that's what we're going to call it.
No, wait.
Whoa.
That dog doesn't know how to fetch for shit.
Stemming the Tide is an actual play podcast of the Adventure Path Abomination Vaults, and is produced by the Uncharted North Network. Stemming the Tide uses trademarks and or copyrights owned by Paizo Inc., used under Paizo's community use policy. We are expressly prohibited from charging you to use or access this content. Stemming the Tide is not published, endorsed, or specifically approved by Paizo. For more information about Paizo Inc. and Paizo products, visit paizo.com. Music is composed by Will Savino, and artwork by Greyhood. Stemming the Tide is recorded remotely using Foundry Virtual Tabletop. If you wish to connect with us or support this project and projects to come, we can be found at unchartednorth.ca, patreon.com/unchartednorth, and on all major social media platforms. Links to all credits can be found in the episode description and our website. Thanks for tuning in.